From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. The peak of summer is here, and whether you're headed off to a beach vacation or staying home, a summer read makes a great companion. Is your go-to read a dreamy romance, or maybe a thriller, possibly a mystery, or a personal memoir? Well, whatever your reading tastes are, we've got you covered. We are joined by book critics and a bookstore owner today that are here to show you the way on great summer reads, also to hash it out on that everlasting debate over what makes a great summer book anyway. So this hour on Point, great summer reads in 2019. And you can join us. What are you reading this summer? What does the quintessential beach book look like to you? Or what kind of story does it entail? Give us your recommendations for what we should be putting on our reading lists before Labor Day. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, joining me today is Lori Hertzel, senior books editor for the Minneapolis Star Tribune and president of the National Book Critics Circle. She joins us from St. Paul, Minnesota. Lori, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here, Meghna.
It is really great to have you. And also with us is Lee Haber, books editor for O, the Oprah magazine, and coordinator of Oprah's Book Club. Lee, welcome to you as well.
Thank you, Meghna. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. Hannah Oliver Depp joins us. She is owner of Loyalty Bookstore in Washington, D.C. Hannah, welcome to On Point.
So glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
And I should say that Lee and Hannah are with us today from New York City. And by the way, we will be talking about all of their recommendations for great summer books. And we have the list from Lori, Lee, and Hannah at our website, onpointradio.org. So before we dive into your recommendations for great summer reads, I just want us, let's hash it out here about the great beach book debate. And Lee, I'll just start with you here. I mean, is there any such thing as the quintessential beach book, or are we thinking too small when we say that there's a perfect summer read?
I don't know. I'm just speaking as a reader. And for me, I just keep my reading habits going into the summer. So nothing really switches for me in terms of what I read in the summer on the beach. I need something absorbing, something challenging, something that captivates my interest, something I can, you know, just kind of disappear into. And, you know, so for me, the genre, the category doesn't really switch.
Yeah. And Hannah, what do you think?
I think that beach reads are really fun things to market, to make displays for, but they don't really exist. It's all about the reader, what the individual reader is looking for. Obviously, I come to this from a person-to-person perspective because I love to talk to people individually about what books they're reading. I do think that people, whatever they're taking on vacation, usually has something to do with what they're going through personally.
Good point. But Lori, I think historically there's been this thought, and maybe it's purely driven by the publishing industry and marketing, but that sometimes when we think about summer reads, we want something that, you know, is a little easier to digest, that we can, you know, put down between other things that we're doing on vacations, that perhaps isn't as, I don't want to use this phrase, but I can't think of anything better, as demanding on us as readers as other literature might be. Is that just plain wrong?
No, I think that's true. I like what Lee and Hannah both said, especially Hannah saying that people bring with them books depending on where they are in their life right now. But traditionally, certainly lighter books have been published in the summer. The big books are usually in the fall or in April. There's a rhythm to the publishing world. And I think in the past, beach books were kind of women's fiction. I'm kind of afraid to use that term because it's more than that. But, you know, Elin Hildebrand or, you know, these kind of stories that have romances and are lighter reading. Because I think when people are on vacation up at the cabin, which is more of a thing here than beaches, actually. yeah, we don't have a lot of beaches in Minnesota, just a few. But, you know, you're doing a lot of things. You're out in the canoe and you're, you know, maybe you're dozing in the sun. And I think that traditionally it has meant lighter reading. I do think that's changing. You see a lot more literary fiction being published year-round, I think, than maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Colson Whitehead's new book is coming out, you know, this month, or is just out. And that's certainly not what you would call
today,
a traditional beach read.
Well, when I was looking at, this is Lee, when I was looking at summer reading, you know, because we have to do a summer reading issue every year in O Magazine, what popped out at me was big literary women's fiction.
Yes.
You know, there were so many big women writers who are being published in the summer.
Well, actually,
it's interesting.
Yeah, and Lee, mm-hmm. sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I was just thinking that there was someone on your list, the author of Fleischman is in Trouble, who she has recently, I think she tweeted that she was pushing back against people characterizing her book as a summer read.
Well, you know, that book is a novel. It starts out kind of as a, you know, romantic comedy, but it becomes very subversive. You know, the mm-hmm. point of view switches, you know, so you think that you're kind of in this funny, divorced, you know, divorced dad who's sexting girlfriends and so on. You think that that's what's happening and that his wife has abandoned him. And then there's a kind of bait and switch that gives it a bit of a feminist twist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the author is Taffy Brodesser Ackner. Did I say her name?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah.
Correct.
She tweeted that she was puzzled why her book was being described as a beach read. And she wrote, "I'm confused as to why our taste for what we would like would change in the location we read it or the season," to the point that you were saying. Okay. So you know what? I'm glad that we had our version of the great beach book debate. But let's hear from all of you what the one book. I mean, we've got a whole list here, but I want to hear just briefly from each of you what the one book is from your list that you really think people should make an effort to read before the summer is out. And Hannah, let me just start with you.
Oh, man. What a terrible question to ask me. you know, I think probably a book that I would try to put in every single person's hand this year is On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous by Ocean Vuong, which is nothing like a beach read, if that's what you're looking for. But it will capture you and carry you away. It is beautiful prose, playful, dangerous writing, doesn't give a fig about what you expect of a novel, but it is transformative characters, and it was beautiful. I could not put it down.
Wow. And Lee and Lori, have you read it? You have any thoughts about that one?
I've read it. I think I agree with Hannah's assessment. It's gorgeously written. It reads like a memoir, and the experience of the characters is very close to Ocean's own life. But, you know, just for the gorgeous prose alone, it's just incredible.
Yeah.
I've read part of it. I can't read every book, which just kills me.
What?
I know.
What?
Huh? I know the
Don't
rest
give away
of
the
you
secret
do,
that we can't read every book.
But he was just here, and I mean, he's a poet, and so yes, his language is beautiful. The writing is beautiful. It's, you know, it's sad. I try not to put sad books on my list. You know, who wants to cry at the beach?
I do, actually. I mean, why not?
Like, we can all cry in a cabin. I feel good about that.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, Lori, I'm going to ask you the same, quote, terrible question. And what's the one book that you really think people ought to strive to read before the summer's out?
It is a terrible question because do you know how hard it was to come up with five? And now you're
torturous,
saying
I'm
bring
sure.
it to one. But I am going to say, hands down, The Salt Path by Rainer Wynn, which is a memoir. It came out in March, and it is a wonderful read. And I have lent this book to so many people, and everyone is inspired by it. It starts off tragically. She and her husband, whose name is Moth, they live in England or Wales, I believe, and they've lost everything. They've lost their home, their livelihood, all of their money. They're in their 50s. Moth gets this devastating diagnosis of an incurable degenerative illness, and they don't know what to do. And so they have nowhere to go, and they get backpacks, and they just start hiking. And they hike for 2 years and live outside. And it is inspiring. It is so beautifully written. Her observations of nature are wonderful. Her observations of the homeless, sort of the hidden homeless, which they become part of, are very insightful. And it's a very inspiring book, but I just loved it.
Now, from what I see in one of the reviews, that this they lost their home and their livelihood suddenly, right, due to a judicial mistake or something like that?
Yes, they had invested in a friend's business, which went bankrupt, and they were being held responsible to pay back whatever. I'm not sure what the amount was, but it was some huge amount. And they fought this in court for years, which emptied their savings. And they finally found this last piece of evidence that proved they were not responsible to pay this bill. And the judge said, I'm sorry, it's too late. This has been going on for too long. I'm just going to make my judgment and they ran a little farm and bed and breakfast in Wales, and that had to be sold. So
wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, Lee, we've got about a minute and a half before we have to take our first break here, and I do want to give you a chance to also answer my same terrible question about your one must read.
Terrible question. I have to choose one of my darlings. I'm going to go in a different direction and say Rules for Visiting by Jessica Frances Kane. I picked it up and I just couldn't put it down until I finished it. It's about friendship. It's about a middle-aged woman who's a landscape designer and at a university, and she doesn't have enough friends. So she decides to reconnect with old friends and go on a few field trips to reconnect with them. And it's gorgeously written. It's kind of an antidote to all of the vitriol that's in our culture right now. I just completely advise it as an antidote for the incivility that we feel.
No, agree. But yeah. So what exactly is the antidote that she's providing? Is it sort of the soulfulness of reconnecting with people?
It's that, and it's also she writes beautifully about plants and trees and very lovingly about their role in our culture. There's something very soothing about her approach and how she draws on Jane Austen and Virginia Woolf, and there's something a little old-fashioned about it in a nice way.
Yeah. Well, we are talking this hour about great books for the summer of 2019. Lee Haber joins us. She's books editor for O, the Oprah magazine. Hannah Oliver Depp is with us. She's owner of Loyalty Bookstore in Washington, D.C. And Lori Hertzel is with us as well. She's the senior book editor for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. And we want to hear from you. What's on your summer reading list? And what have you loved and couldn't put down so far? This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about great books to read this summer or for the second half of this summer. And I'm joined today by a terrific panel of book lovers and experts. Lori Hertzel is with us. She's senior books editor for the Minneapolis Star Tribune and president of the National Book Circle, Critics Circle, excuse me. Lee Haber is also with us. She's books editor for O, the Oprah magazine and coordinator of Oprah's book club as well. And Hannah Oliver Depp joins us. She's owner of Loyalty Bookstore in Washington, D.C., and we want to hear from you. What makes for a perfect summer read for you? Or maybe what's the one book this summer that you picked up and just couldn't put down? And Lee, actually, before the break, we were talking about one of the books on your list of five that we asked you to generate, Rules for Visiting. And actually, I was wondering if you could read an excerpt of that from Jessica
sure,
Frances
Kean. Sure, I'd love
to. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, midway through my 40th year, I reached a point where the balance of the past and all it contained seemed to outweigh the future. My mind so full of things said and not said, done and undone, I no longer understood how to move forward. I was tipped backward and wobbly. My balance was off, and this made sense to me. A life seemed so long, I couldn't see how anyone proceeded under the accumulated weight of it. Medication helped for a while. Mainly, I recall it giving me for a few months a pleasant sense of the present. I went to Washington, D.C. for a landscaping conference around that time, and I remember with fondness the new and sudden ease of my morning routine. The edges of everything seemed clearer. And I don't mean just the lovely things, like trees and the sunrise and the flowering kale, genus brassica, planted everywhere in that city, but tubes of toothpaste and pots of face cream. It was easier to wash my face in the morning. In fact, it was a pleasure. I believed again in the possibility of a new day, the present one and the next one after that.
Wow, that's Lee Haber reading an excerpt of Rules for Visiting by Jessica Frances Keene. And, you know, I can't remember which one of you, but someone a couple of minutes ago said that people often read books that sort of tell you where they are in their lives. Hannah, was that you who said that?
Yes.
Yeah. So like this reading, I haven't read Rules for Visiting yet, but in the first part of that passage that Lee just read about when you midway through her 40, the narrator's 40th year, when the point of balance between all that has passed and all that's potentially contained in the future, that really hit me really hard, because I think it's a beautiful summation of these sort of transformational or transitional moments that we reach in life. And I felt like I'm right there. The weight of the past seems seems a little more heavily accumulated than the future, perhaps.
And to at least point from earlier that we're getting so much more fiction from women, especially also people of color, queer folks. I think we're getting a lot more of those stories of transitional moments that we were missing before, coming from major publishers, being promoted for summer reading, getting on lists. And it's really, I think, reaching people where they need to be reached.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because it's a diversity of the transitional moments, right? Not the not the typical one that's often been represented in literature. Well, look, we got calls pouring in, so let me just at least start bringing folks in here to our, I guess, virtual summer book club. Lorray is calling from Fort Mill, South Carolina. Lorray, you're on the air.
Hi. So the book I love reading this summer is The Overstory. The book has
talk about trees.
Yes, it's all about trees, and there's so many characters, and it's just something that you can get into and connect to. But I think while you're out in nature, it's beautiful to read about nature.
Absolutely. That's a tough read, but it's worth it. And didn't it win the Pulitzer?
It did.
Yes, it did. Mm-hmm.
Well, Lorray, thank you.
Great pick.
Thank you so much for that. Lori Herzl, let me turn to you here and ask you to read an excerpt from one of your picks, if you could.
Okay. I'm going to read from Biloxi by Mary Miller. And just to set that up.
Oh, I love that book too.
Really? Oh, good. Oh, I'm so glad I did too.
The dog.
Yes. The dog. The story is about a kind of depressed guy who's retired early, and he's sitting around waiting for his inheritance. And as soon as you see the word inheritance, you know he's never going to get an inheritance. And he's lonely, and he's divorced, and he's estranged from his daughter. And, I mean, what a bleak life. And then he accidentally gets a dog, and it changes his life very slowly and in really, really weird ways. So I am going to read one paragraph about the dog, who is a really great character. The dog wasn't in the backyard, which meant she was somewhere else. I couldn't think beyond that. I imagined her trotting down the street and onto the main road, looking for the house where we had recently seen all of the squirrels, a group of them taunting her from the base of a tree. Would she remember such a thing, try to find her way back there? What was a group of squirrels called? I got in my car and drove slowly to the main road, yelling her name out the window. The cars were flying past, and I knew, then and there, that she was dead. I wondered what I'd do if she really was dead, how I'd handle it. I thought for sure it would be the end of me.
That's an excerpt from Biloxi by Mary Miller. Now, I heard a chorus of, oh, yes. So was that was that you, Lee, and Hannah telling me, why do you love that book?
I loved it. We featured it in the magazine. Yeah. And I loved it because kind of reminded me in a way of Anne Tyler, you know, these cantankerous characters who, you know, are just at odds with themselves in life, and they're kind of misanthropes. There's a comedy to it. You know, it's very poignant. It's a, you know, kind of a simple story, but really beautifully told, and a lot of layers to it.
Well, let's go back to our callers. Ellen is calling from Sudbury, Massachusetts. Ellen, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling with a book recommendation. It's called Into the Night by Erica Forensic. It's her second published novel, and it's about a a girl who, about a 19-year-old girl who has been in foster care and has decided to take a job in Bolivia teaching English, except that the job actually doesn't occur. And it's an adventure. She ends up going into the Amazon. I actually haven't finished the book yet, but so far it's so vivid. It reminds me of a John Steinbeck book because it really puts you into the Amazon. You can hear the way she describes the sounds of the animals and the just the curve of a leaf. You can just, it's so vivid. You even see the colors.
Yeah. Ellen, did you mean to say Into the Jungle? That's the title of the book?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, did I make a mistake?
That's all right. It's live radio.
You said Into the Night.
Very exciting. Either way.
Well, Ellen, thank you so much for your call and for that recommendation as well. Oh, and by the way, just I want to remind folks that the five books that Lori, Lee, and Hannah each selected for us for this hour's conversation, we do have that list at onpointradio.org. So don't forget about that. Let's go to Nancy, who's calling from Buffalo, New York. Nancy, you're on the air.
Hello. Well, I recently was watching that TV talk show called The View, and they had the same topic, what's some good summer reading. And one of the hosts on the show recommended that, she said there is now a publication out in paperback of the Mueller report. Uh-huh. And yep. She recommended highly that people read this, and she showed a copy of it. It was a thick paperback volume there of just, you know, a single book. And it's now apparently been published and available to the public.
It has been. And in fact, there are certain groups, like the Washington Post has an annotated version of the Mueller report.
I do recommend that the Washington Post annotated version, and not just because of local town pride, but I do think that it is helpful.
Yeah. Well, in fact, a lot of their reporting appeared in the Mueller report itself. but I've actually heard that several book clubs, some that I know locally, are reading the Mueller report as a book club selection.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Is that a good one for book club selection? Answer.
I'd say yes. I mean, there's a lot to debate, unpack right, to dissect. It's a perfect, you know, point of discussion.
There's also been some nationwide read-alouds as well, which is a really interesting way to experience
it. Including on stage, like Broadway. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Well, let's take a turn here quite dramatically. And Hannah, I'd love if you could read from one of the selections on your list. And this is Red, White, and Royal Blue, a novel, which just the concept of it just cracks me up. So tell us a little bit about what Casey McQuiston has in this novel.
Yes, this is where I take a complete 180 and tell you all to read frothy romance novels all summer long because I love them. But in my defense, I read frothy romance novels all year long. And I do think that this has like the wit of a classic movie. The like dialogue between the two main characters and really the larger family within the novel is so delightful and will really carry you through. You know, between the sexy fics, which, you know, really are why we're reading this. But I do think it's a delightful story. It's the story of the alternate first family we could have had. So there's some lovely fantasy elements there. It's nice escapism. And the first son of the first family, and he's sort of paired opposite the Prince Harry character, who's the British prince in a novel, and it starts out as this hate relationship, and they despise each other, and then there's an international incident involving a wedding cake, and they have to make nice and play nice to save the reputation of both the families, and it becomes a real friendship, a real true friendship, and then a love story after that. But the selection I'll be reading shows you more towards the beginning of the hate relationship. So this is Alex, who's the first son, who's getting ready for a photo op with Henry, the British prince. Alex rests his elbows on the lacquered white fence boards, fighting back the sudden, absurd feeling he's underdressed for this. On any other day, his chinos and button-down would be fine for a casual photo op, but for the first time in a long time, he's feeling distinctly out of his element. Does his hair look awful from the plane? It's not like Henry's going to look much better after polo practice. He'll probably be sweaty and disgusting. As if on cue, Henry comes galloping around the bend on the back of a pristine white horse. He is definitely not sweaty or disgusting. He is, instead, bathed dramatically in a sweeping and resplendent sunset, wearing a crisp black jacket and riding pants tucked into tall leather boots, looking every inch an actual fairy tale prince. He unhooks his helmet and takes it off with one gloved hand, and his hair underneath is just as attractively tousled enough to look like it's supposed to be that way. "I'm going to throw up on you," Alex says. So that's more of the hate part of the love-hate relationship.
No, you shouldn't apologize at all for putting this on your list.
Absolutely. No apology. Zero apology. All excitement.
I love how it's, as you said, sort of an alternative story here. As a bookstore owner, have you been seeing in the past couple of months that, I don't know, alternative fiction, science fiction, fantasy? I know I'm crossing genres here, but sales of that going up? Is that what people are gravitating to more than usual?
Sci-fi? Yes. I mean, everything in the past 2 years has been things that have been popular genres for a long time, actually, are being observed by the mainstream as viable. Mm-hmm. So you're getting everything from queer romance, Afrofuturism. I mean, all these things are entering the mainstream in such a strong way. And the audiences have been there for a long time. And, bookstore owners and readers and bookstagrammers could be telling you this for a long time, but it's really being noticed. And it's wonderful because it's reaching an even larger audience. But there's definitely one of the strange things of the 2016 election is that it triggered a switch in a lot of
Absolutely.
People's reading.
Now, I'm just
people
gonna,
are more open to exploring things.
Forgive me for exposing my deep ignorance here, but bookstagrammers?
I feel like Lee might be able to talk about this even better than I could. But so it's the corner of the internet that adores and spends its time taking beautiful pictures of books, discussing their reading lists. It's actually a really wonderful thing that bookstores tap into as well. I hold a monthly bookstagram meetup, and all the DC area bookstagrammers come and we have wine and talk about what we're reading. And it's just a really great way to share.
You can tell
books.
A book by its cover.
I'm sorry. You can.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Now, sometimes there's great books with terrible covers, but, it helps. It really is a great way to discover some books that you may not have heard of otherwise.
I love this idea. See, I learn something new every single day working on this show. So bookstagramming, had never heard it, loved it. Okay, I love this idea. Okay, so let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Teddy, who's calling from Dayton, Ohio. Teddy, you're on the air.
Hi. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I've got both a comment, which is kind of old school, and then a question, which is going to be new school as far as the whole aspect of reading and how its effect online might have with families. I grew up in a very book-oriented, reading-oriented family where my mother was switching between Harlequin romances and tabloids during the summer, and my dad was almost always reading technical manuals. And as the oldest of four boys, I read lots of adventure stuff, Conan and things like that, Tarzan. And my brothers were enthralled with comic books and coloring books, which we took with us on summer trips. But I couldn't wait for a summer trip to camp where I could get into my uncle's collection of paperback mysteries and adventure novels and seagoing tales. Everybody in the family seemed to gravitate to a book. And they always had a book in their hand, in their purse, a tabloid, a magazine my dad might go through in the summer would be sports car magazines. But it just seemed to be such an important part. Now as my nieces and nephews have grown up, I don't know if they're on Kindle or what, but they all have their devices kind of as the same little security blanket that they carry around with to sort of keep the dysfunctional family from imploding. Everybody has their little escape.
All right.
And currently I've picked up my dad's bad habit of technical manuals. But anyway, so my question is, I'm 56 this year, so I'm really kind of tired of reading, adventure novels, except for I still gravitate to British-style murder mysteries in the wintertime when I'm stuck inside and it's cold. So
what was your question,
Teddy? My question is, how will online reading affect those bonds between people as we share. You know, do we still share what we're reading with each other? You know, we can't leave the book around for somebody else to pick up anymore.
Well, Teddy, I'm
going to up to.
Yeah, I'm going to take it back from you because we just have a minute before we have to go to the next break. But thank you so much for your call. And Lori Herzl, let me just turn to you. I mean, Hannah just opened my eyes to the world of bookstagramming. But to Teddy's question about, I guess, the digital world. What's your response to him?
Well, he's right that people read a lot on tablets and phones, but I think that those numbers might be dropping or plateauing.
Dramatic.
I think
that
the recent things that I have read say that people still prefer physical books, which I think is a really good thing, and then you can share. I think you can share a digital file as well, but it's much more fun to share a real book.
Yeah. Well, I'm disheartened to hear that people can find ways to share the experience of reading together online as they're still using physical books in their own hands. So we got to take a quick break, but we'll come right back. We are talking about great summer reads for 2019. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmanning, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about great books to read for the remainder of summer 2019. And I have a terrific group of book lovers and book experts here to walk us through their picks. Lori Herzl is with us. She's senior books editor for the Minneapolis Star Tribune and president of the National Book Critics Circle. Lee Haber joins us. She's books editor for O, the Oprah magazine, and coordinator of Oprah's Book Club. And Hannah Oliver Depp is with us. She's owner of Loyalty Bookstore in Washington, D.C. And Lee, let me turn back to you and your list here, your top five book list that you gave to us. Oh, and by the way, everyone, okay. Once again, onpointradio.org is the place to go to see the list from Lori, Lee, and Hannah. There's a book I would love to hear you tell us about because I had not heard of it, and now I'm going to run to my local bookstore and grab it. The Confessions of Franny Langton.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That is an amazing book. It's a first novel by a woman who has been an attorney, a lawyer for 17 years in England. And she's someone who came from, I think, Grand Cayman and Jamaica. Anyway, it's a historical thriller, and it's also very subversive. You know, because what it does is to, there's an unreliable narrator piece of it. So it's about a woman who is a slave who becomes employed, you know, in slave-like still quarters and becomes very close to the mistress of the house and one day wakes up to find both the master and mistress of the house murdered and she's implicated. Mm. So the question is, did she do it or not? And for most of the book, you really don't know. But it's also an exploration of race and slavery, identity, immigration. It's just beautifully done.
I'm just reading an excerpt and a review of it. I absolutely want to read this. It sounds fantastic. And again, we keep kind of touching on this in your various selections that we have a lot of really strong books that are coming from diverse perspectives and mixing genres in a way mm-hmm. to tell us mm-hmm. you know to tell us stories in a new way, which I find very exciting.
Yeah, and you know, we featured her also in the July summer reading issue of O, Sarah Collins, and we asked her what was, you know, sort of on her vision board. And so she had all these like surgical implements and all of these, all this ephemera surrounding her. It was really interesting to get, you know, kind of inside her head. But yeah, it stretches back to, you know, immigration, slavery, Jamaica, the fact that there, you know, there wasn't formal slavery at the time of this novel in England, and yet there were, you know, slave-like circumstances. It's fascinating.
Yeah. Well, so that's The Confessions of Franny Langton by Sarah Collins from Lee Haber's list. Laurie Hertzel, let me turn back to you here, because we also have great books coming from reliably excellent authors. And Richard Russo has shown up on your list. His latest book, Chances Are. I was wondering if you could actually read an excerpt from that.
I'm happy to. This book won't be out until August. So you can just reserve it at your local bookstore. And it is a novel that goes back and forth in time. It toggles between like 1969, these young men who are in college and trying to, at the beginning of the book, they're watching the draft on TV to see if they're going to go to Vietnam. And then the book toggles into kind of present day when they meet up again. And there's also a young woman that factors into the book quite significantly. So this excerpt is from 1969 when they're watching the draft on TV. By the time Teddy's birthday finally came up, he and Lincoln and Mickey were the only guys left in the Hasher room. Passionately opposed to the war, Teddy had told his friends earlier in the day that he would go to Canada or jail rather than get drafted, so to him the lottery was meaningless. But of course that wasn't really true. He didn't want to go to Canada and wasn't sure that when push came to shove he'd have the necessary courage of his convictions to actually go to jail in protest. Distracted by these thoughts, by the time only 20-odd unannounced birthdays remained, he was convinced that he had already been read out and he'd somehow missed it, maybe when they were adjusting the TV's rabbit ears. But then, there it was, 322nd out of 366. He was beyond safe. Reaching to turn off the TV, he realized his hand was shaking.
That's Laurie Hertzel reading an excerpt from Richard Russo's forthcoming novel, Chances Are. Really great selection for our list here. Look, we've got lots of callers who want to jump in here. So let's go to Harper, who's calling from Tampa, Florida. Harper, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Harper. Go ahead.
I'd like to say that Terror at Bottle Creek is a really good book, and I'd definitely recommend it.
I haven't heard of it, Harper. Who's the author of Terror at Bottle Creek?
Watt Key.
Okay, and what's it about?
It's about a boy who is 13 that gets his father is lost somewhere, and during a hurricane, he is trapped in like a tree with all these poisonous snakes and it's just really good.
Yeah, it sounds definitely like a great Florida book, Harper. Do you mind if I ask how old you are?
I'm 11.
Okay, so what's first of all, I just think it's terrific that you called in.
Yeah, it's great.
What's the difference for you between what you read in the summer versus what you might read at school, Harper?
It's not very different. Just some of the books might be a little easier, but most of the time it's not different at all.
Okay, great. Well, Harper, thank you so much for your call, and keep reading. And Terror at Bottle Creek by Watt Key was Harper's suggestion here. Let's go to Anne, who's calling from Columbia, Missouri. Anne, you're on the air.
Hi, Magna. Thanks. I'm calling to recommend not so much a single book as an author, and this is for your listeners who are interested in genre fiction, particularly science fiction and fantasy, and the author is Elizabeth Moon, and she has written series and standalone novels in which there are complex characters whose narrative arcs bend toward the good, which is kind of refreshing at this point. You know, we really need that.
Yeah, definitely.
And she does excellent world building, since she's, you know, generally not writing for our world. And her characters are almost always strong female characters, and they're women of different ages. There are young women, there are postmenopausal women, there are mature women, and so it's sort of refreshing to read science fiction or fantasy novels that center on women's stories, and often also women of different ethnicity.
Yeah. And,
so I highly recommend them.
Thank you so much, Anne, for that suggestion. Elizabeth Moon, I'm going to admit that I had never heard of her. Hannah, Lee, or Lori, do you know of Elizabeth Moon?
Yes, yes. She's often on reading lists for people who enjoy science fiction and fantasy who are looking for something a little bit different. I love a coming-of-age narrative or, you know, kind of our typical young person discovers they had it inside of them all along. That often gets associated with fantasy or science fiction. But there's a whole world out there for all different kinds of readers to find their way into these fantasies that have a lot to tell us.
Well, and on the point that that she was making about that it's a story for good, Hannah, since I'm talking to you here, I was wondering if I can use that as a bridge to get you to talk about a nonfiction choice I believe you made called Pleasure Activism. Mm.
Yes. This is by a activist writer. I believe she's also a doula. I mean, she's just an amazing person. Adrienne Marie Brown, who really looks at the intersection of the activism in our lives and our increasing awareness from all different sorts of people and Black feminist activism that's existed for a long time that doesn't deny the physical toll and physical joys of activism. And it's called pleasure activism. It's sensual. It is truly about how we can bring all of the parts of ourselves together for change. It is really, really a wonderful book. It's clever. It's funny. It, like I said, I'm using the word sensual because it is truly. When she says pleasure activism, she means pleasure activism. denial, you know, we think of activism as this just like hard, slogging, dirty thing we have to do. And she's arguing for transformation.
Wow. And that's Adrienne Marie Brown, Pleasure Activism, The Politics of Feeling Good. Okay, Lee, I'm going to turn back to you here because there's another book on your list, just sort of speaking of where we are in our lives that I was just like, I need to read this book. Need, haha. It's The Need by Helen Phillips.
Oh, yeah.
Talk to me about it.
Yeah. You know, I was talking to Helen when I first read the book because I felt like there's a new genre or subgenre emerging, which I'm struggle to find a name for, but I'm going to call it something like Matra Dystopia. So it's sort of about the pleasures, but also the pains and the primal nature of motherhood and how sometimes young mothers become so exhausted, they become insomniacs, and how there's a kind of nightmare element to that stage of life. And so The Need is kind of a thriller in which a woman named Molly, she's an archaeologist, is at home with her two small kids while her musician husband is on tour, and she's exhausted. And she's, you know, sort of something is or isn't going on in her life. You're never really sure whether what is happening is imagined, a dream, a fantasy. You know, you're really not sure, but you're always on the edge of your seat.
Matra Dystopia. I think you have coined the name of a new genre.
I'm into it.
That's The Need by Helen Phillips. Oh, it just sounds so absolutely fascinating. So let's go back to our callers here. So many people have good suggestions. Katie is calling from Baltimore, Maryland. Katie, you're on the air.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call. My summer reading suggestion is The Master Plan by Chris Wilson.
Tell me more.
It is equal parts heart-wrenching and inspiring. It is a true story, an autobiography, actually, about a young man that grows up in an incredibly violent neighborhood and family situation, and he is convicted of murder and set to life in prison at the age of 17. And he ends up serving about 10 years of his sentence due to his working on his master plan, which is just this incredible list of things that he wants to accomplish, even though there seems to be absolutely no hope for him.
Oh, wow. And it's his memoir, you said.
Correct. Yes. He has a co-writer, and it's a heavy book for a summer read, but at the same time, the inspiration is just overflowing. And for Chris Wilson himself, he absolutely loves to read books. And so that's, you know, one of the things that gets him through the time that he spends in prison.
Hmm. Well, Katie, thank you so much for your call. And Lori, let me turn to you on this, because memoirs or a version of a memoir type book showed up on all three of your lists for you, Lee, and Hannah today. Is summer a great time to really dive into a memoir, into the life of another person?
Oh, memoir has become so popular, and it does not show any signs of fading. I mean, I think with, you know, Mary Carr and Angela's Ashes and, you know, those books that were how many years ago now, 20, 25 years ago, it just really took off. And I think there is just something that we love about peeking into someone else's life. And the memoirs that are fictionalized or we find out later, you know, are wholly fiction, are hugely disappointing, because the appeal of memoir is, you know, this really happened and these people really exist, and a way to see into someone else's life. So, yes, I think, you know, there are certainly big book memoirs that maybe are better for winter. I don't know. But I think summer is a great time to be kind of a voyeur.
Yeah. Well, let's sneak one more call in here. Melissa is calling from Ithaca, New York. Melissa, you're on the air.
Hi, Magna. Thanks for taking my call. I'm going to be really brief. I am someone who's completely addicted to fiction. And yesterday I read a nonfiction book that was just obsessively wonderful. It's called The Feather Thief, by Kirk Wallace Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to tell you, about 10 years ago on NPR, I heard a little blip about the true story of this robbery in England that had to do with feathers. And this is the account of millions of dollars worth of feathers stolen from a very small British museum. And it's got all this historical stuff about Darwin and how feathers came into, you know, into fashion, and why there was so much money and fly tires. And it was really not something I would normally read. And it's clearly about obsession. And the interesting thing was, I was completely obsessed. I read it in a day.
Well, Melissa, thank you so much for that. That's The Feather Thief by Kirk Wallace Johnson, released last year, I believe. So we've just got 2 minutes left, Lori, Lee, and Hannah. And you know what I love about doing these kinds of hours is you hear in the voices of our listeners, in your voices, just that how much people love to read. And how I think one of the unifying descriptions of what folks say is the definition of a great summer book is this, like, it's the one you cannot put down, that you do just, you know, read across an entire day. And I find it very inspiring and heartening that there's still so much passion for book reading out there.
There sure is.
And just wanted to hear your last thoughts on the fact that there's so much love for diving into literature or nonfiction or memoir, as we've been hearing this hour. Hannah, what do you think?
I mean, I think that it's storytelling. People want to connect to someone. They want to disappear into something. They want an author who's in control of their story. What form that story takes differs wildly, but we all want to be swept away.
And Lee, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, sure. I think I started reading because I felt so socially awkward, you know, and books were kind of a shield I could just bury my, you know, my face into. And the fact that I read for a living and I carry a bag of books with me everywhere I go, and, you know, I still have that passion. And everywhere I travel, if I have a book in my hand, there will be someone who will start a conversation with me who has an equal level of passion.
That's right. It's a real connecting force. Lori Herzl, your last thought?
I'm going to go get Terror at Bottle Creek, because he was passionate about that.
Snakes.
I'm not kidding. I seriously am. I just love hearing recommendations from other people, and I have been writing down these titles. You know, there were quite a few books I hadn't heard of, and I'm going to go look
them
up.
Me too. Well, and The Feather Thief is really good.
Yes.
That's one I'm adding to my list as well. So Lori Herzl, Lee Haber, and Hannah Oliver Depp, thank you all so much for joining us this hour and for your lists of suggestions. We have those lists at onpointradio.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.